Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast for Saturday, February 21st, 2009. I'm Steve Borsch, and the gang members on today are Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hello from snowy Bloomington.
Yeah, no kidding. And our very special guest, TJ Kudalis, who's a senior multimedia engineer from Internet Broadcasting Systems. How you doing, TJ?
Real well, thanks. You guys?
Excellent. You and I never met until we were down at Intermedia Arts before Mini Demo, and yeah. You know, kind of getting a tour and a lay of the land in terms of you shooting video and streaming it, which, by the way, thanks again. That was great. And then you and I kind of went off on this tangent about video. And I literally was sitting there, you know, obviously trying to keep up with you, but also amazed at the kinds of things that were going on. And tell us a little bit about IBS and your role there.
Sure. Internet Broadcasting Systems, we've been around for, gosh, since 95, 96. We are web publishers for television stations, primarily large ownership groups. So Hearst, Argyle, Post, Newsweek, folks like that. Yep. We have a suite of publishing technologies. I am the senior video guy there. And so I'm sort of in charge of our video acquisition management for both live and on demand.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. And you guys do how many, 70 sites total, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. It changes, you know, we have, that sounds about right. I think we have 7 major corporate partners, I think.
Okay. And then the fun fact to know and tell, Akamai, who's the biggest content delivery network, or CDN, you guys were customer, what, 95, 96, something like that?
95, yeah. We're proud of our very low customer number.
Yes, yes. Well, also, also says that you've been around since the very beginning of, you know, sort of the delivery of highly scalable shipment of video across the net.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Akamai and their distribution model has been absolutely essential for the growth of our company. You know, not just in video. I mean, video is it's a big part of it, and it's you know, my big part of it. But the company as a whole, we actually helped Akamai create their XSLT product. For edge transformation. So basically, the way our publication engine works is that we publish raw XML for everything, and we establish a rule set for translation out on the edge into HTML for clients. So we've been kind of, I guess that's a very early form of cloud computing, and we've been doing that since 2000 or 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Since it seems like everybody and their brother's doing video these days, can you talk a little bit about how the technology's changed over the years since the early days till today?
Sure. Well, I remember I started as a journalist for Internet Broadcasting, working at WCCO for channel4000.com.
Oh.
And my primary stuff then was I was doing audio recording. So I was running around. That was about the coolest multimedia stuff we could do then.
Yeah, right. So. Okay, so you were running around doing audio.
Yeah, this is back in the day. So this is 99 or so, doing audio for Channel 4000. And, you know, that was as much multimedia as we were capable of doing back then, at least, you know, in terms of a breaking news cycle. And that's always been kind of our special focus at IB, is, you know, not just getting video on the internet, but getting video on the internet fast, you know, relevant video. And that really controls us and informs everything we do.
Right.
So, you know, we went from there to Real Networks, Real Video, which at the time, I know I heard some groaning about this earlier, at the time was, frankly, the highest quality around. And honestly, they have always had excellent video quality and technology. Their business model, on the other hand, it may have been a little dodgy here and there, and they certainly kind of got in their own way, I think, with a lot of the business decisions they made with their player and their tools. But we started doing Real in about postage stamp size, you know, I think 160 by 120 video.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it took off. It was popular back then. You could watch it over a dial-up, and, you know, it was a novelty. It was great for promotions, but I don't think it really took off for us at least until September 11th. We did video live streaming here and there, but on September 11th, we saw record live streaming. We had, you know, at the time, I think we pushed nearly a gigabit of video.
Wow.
Which, yeah, astonishing, absolutely astonishing to us. And our stream stayed up where a lot of other folks didn't. So that was kind of a real watershed for us as a company and for the video technology as a whole.
One thing I'm wondering about is the content feeds that you guys did for the Olympics. Was that like a huge load as well? Or was that more non-video?
That was a combination. And to be actually, that was a huge undertaking. You know, we did a huge amount of data feeds and sort of retooled our publishing for, you know, down to the second results publishing. But we also did a great amount of video. I actually went over to Athens and then to Trino in 2006 to run our video plants there. You know, we did that. That was kind of a... It was quite an enterprise. NBC kind of gave us a big bundle of wires and said, go.
Wow.
So we built a little TV station there in terms of routing. We had a good half dozen encoding computers and some full-time people just sitting there grinding video out 24/7 for a couple weeks. But yeah, that all came across. You know, we did live streaming in 2006. We did, nothing quite on the scale of what they did this last year, but we did, I think we streamed the last USA game, hockey game, for the 2006 Olympics. I think maybe they didn't announce it until I think about a day before, and even then I think it was announced in broadcasting and cable magazines, so we had an audience of mainly television executives. we did millions of video views there, and that was another kind of neat moment for us.
Well, and that's been one of the things that's been interesting. You know, on the one hand, you have all the video sites that we know and love, YouTube and Vimeo and Blip and so on, for the asynchronous delivery of video. And then you have the live events, and, you know, you're seeing things like, you know, the Oprah 500,000 viewers and 242 gigabits per second of traffic, and then the inauguration. And are you seeing a lot more confidence in really incredibly high scale web delivery?
You know, we are certainly seeing people move towards it. It's the industry has matured. The content delivery networks have scaled more and more and more. I mean, obviously, the inauguration was a phenomenal event. You know, I mean, there's a lot of back and forth. There were some failures, but overall, I think it was astonishingly successful, being that it was the most watched live streaming event in history. By a country mile. I mean, we have folks like Akamai and Limelight essentially maxing out their networks.
Yep.
ABC. ABC provisioned a live stream nationally. They passed around to their partners, and they exceeded their own traffic expectations by about five times, pushing over 100 gigabits of video. You know, we ourselves pushed. Gosh, I don't know. We had something like 90,000 concurrent viewers at our peak, pushing over 25 gigabits. I mean, it was astonishing. So I think we're about three times our previous record for concurrent.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that so many people are going to turn that direction, and that we have an infrastructure that can support it, is astonishing. I mean, the level of what's required to stream video to that many people, as opposed to, say, using satellite or regular television technology. We're talking orders of magnitude fewer people have adopted live streaming in the past. And the fact that it will serve so many millions of people via streaming video on the internet, it's kind of funny in one way, because you're like, wow, we can bring live video to your home. You know, it's like, well, welcome to 1951.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it also makes you really appreciate what broadcast can actually do.
Very much so. Very much so. And we still have these arguments. I think we were talking about Ustream has just released a pay model for white label live streaming. And we had an argument about it over at TechCrunch. And, you know, somebody popped in, like somebody always does, and says, well, for $1,200, you know, I can go reach 100,000 people by a satellite for an hour. You know, what are you chumps charging? know, it's still true. It's still true. If you want to reach that many people, you know, across a proven distribution outlet, well, at a certain point, it makes a lot more sense to do traditional media distribution.
Yep.
If you're going for making the buck.
But here's what was interesting. When you and I were chatting, and obviously you're studying this whole category and you're really into it, you kind of alluded to two things that were happening that are trends. One is the pushing down of coding and decoding in hardware, not only at the infrastructure layer, but obviously at the computer layer. And that was one. And then we kind of touched on peer-to-peer. And, you know, I've been looking at companies like Octashape and trying to understand what they, you know, and I can't hold a candle to your technical acumen with respect to all this video delivery, but it's just fascinating to me that, you know, at some point we might be able to do, you know, an IP multicast broadcast from our house and actually not have it cost, you know, $40,000 a minute.
Absolutely. I mean, it's we'll talk about that one first. It's really interesting to see where it's going. I mean, right now, like, I mean, here's a problem that almost every publisher faces. You know, is, you know, what's interesting about like live streaming is that the costs are sort of counterintuitively so much more expensive than regular video clips, which are calling asynchronous or on-demand video, right? So yep. I can have, you know, 10,000 people watch a live stream. I'm sorry, it's like 10,000 people watch a one-minute video clip, right? Well, that's like 1,000 people watching 10 minutes of a live stream. Now, what are you going to stream live that's going to take 10 minutes if you're going to get that many people to sit and watch? You know, nothing. Your live stream events take, you know, are maybe half hour at a minimum, but they tend to go for hours. It's, you know, a breaking news event or something like an inauguration or a parade or a game or weather, right?
Yeah, it's an experience, so, yeah.
Exactly, and it takes some time. It takes time to get people around that. So what you get is, I mean, they're just so much more expensive that it really becomes a challenge for publishers to say, you know what, when I want to stream live, you know, especially in the news business where we're in, you know, that's the most important part. If something's going on that's important enough that you want to stream it live to people, that's what your business is about. But, you know, conversely, it's so expensive, we don't really have a means of monetizing that yet. And that touches on something else that you were talking about, which is just the cost model, the price model of video on the internet just really isn't established yet. It's certainly not mature. You know, so what we found in our business occasionally is, you know, when something great is happening on the news, people want to say, well, great, usually it's bad because it's the news, right?
Yeah.
But if something really important is happening on the news, you know, we want to get as many people as possible watching, but all of a sudden we're like, you know, clients are like, what about the cost? Wait, what is this costing me? You know, do I want to have all these people watching and costing me money? And that's just, that's perverse, you know, and that's a bad, there's something wrong there. There's an unnatural situation there where when you want all your eyeballs, you don't want to have to worry about the cost, right? You should be making money off of that.
Yep.
And right now that's not necessarily the case. You know, we don't necessarily have advertising models that scale well enough for those burst situations so you can scale revenue along with your cost. I mean, I think that's a problem that floats around the industry a lot. We've seen some models come out recently, like the like Mogulus is charging. You kind of gave me some of the models and stuff that you're using.
Right, I love Mogulus, but it's expensive.
Yeah, it is expensive. Well, Ustream's actually even more expensive. I were looking at their sort of basic pay-as-you-go model, and I think it was $4.50 a gigabyte for their beginning stuff, you know, at lower bandwidth. Now, that gets a lot cheaper if you're talking about the big content distribution networks.
Right.
You know, there are, you know, there's the CDN space is really, really crowded right now. So you've got something like 40 different companies right now competing in the CDN space, and most of them all just went through a big round of funding in the last, you know, 6 to 12 months. So the space is really overcrowded. All these guys are flush with cash. So they're not, you know, so they can afford to cut rates right down to the bone. And they're fighting for your business. I think that's going to change. I think in about 18 to 24 months, there's going to be a whole bunch of people going out of business. And maybe things will get a little more natural. But for the most part, all this distribution is being handled by people who are not making money. You know, we're seeing a huge subsidy, you know, from investors to the online video markets.
Yep, yep. You know?
And that, yeah, that distorts things. I mean, that lets us jump forward, which is great. But, like, you know, we're talking about sustainable business models. That's something else entirely. That's something else entirely over the long run.
Right. Well, and that's the tough part is that you know, we even have a great one right here, Swarmcast. You know, Justin
Chapwesky.
Chapwesky, thank you. With his technology, and the difficulty is with all of this is trying to build a model where you can, you know, budget your costs so you know what you have to charge and you know how, what you have to do to make money is really a challenge. It's almost like you need your, you know, your PhD in networking in order to figure out the models.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really complicated. And, you know, the peer-to-peer guys really, I mean, I think if that's really growing. And I mean, the kind of the coming of age of peer-to-peer was really, I think, the inauguration when CNN used Octoshape.
For the inauguration, right?
What's that?
They used Octoshape for the inauguration.
Yep, they used, I think it's Highwinds, which is an American CDN based out of Florida, I think. They are the American distributors for Octoshape, which is a European peer-to-peer live streaming client. That's been really interesting. They were pretty successful. I mean, they shipped millions of streams. I know they did get overloaded at a certain point, so there was a waiting room, which caused quite a little bit of twittering. But at the same point, I mean, wow, talk about a huge event. You know, talk about a huge coming of age for our technology. Now, you know, you're going out there, we're watching streams. The peer-to-peer technology means that whenever I watch it, I'm giving up some of my own bandwidth, right? Which right now is free for most people, but what happens when, say, Comcast starts metering upstream bandwidth too because they're concerned about peer-to-peer work?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the – well, and, you know, we're on Skype right now, or we all were on Skype at one point. You know, I've actually set up events where I've had – somebody coming in remote and their face being projected up like the Apple 1984 commercial up on the screen and in a 3-chip camera set up and a microphone so that the audience member could grab the mic and you could zoom in with the camera so the speaker would have, you know, an experience as though they're right there in the room. And I did one from Sydney, Australia to Minneapolis. And, you know, as I sat there and watched this, as we were doing it, I was just sort of chuckling that, you know, I mean, I didn't have to buy satellite transponder time. That here was a technology that was good enough. You know, the picture wasn't good enough for broadcast television, but it was certainly good enough for what we were doing. And so, you know, that the peer-to-peer aspect of Skype makes it very efficient. And that's why this whole category of delivery is very, very interesting. But, you know, there's no quality of service. You know, you don't know what people's upstream bandwidth is. And, yeah, there are caps being put on by all the major providers as a defensive move, I think, to ensure that they remain in the video delivery game as the primary conduit. So there really isn't. Do you see anything that's emerged that allows a small to mid-sized business, for example, to affordably use any peer-to-peer technology that they could use for broadcasting?
Well, I think really what we're, you know, folks like Swarmcast and folks like Octoshape really are emerging. I mean, with the saturation of the CDN market, you know, these folks with you know, forgive the pun, edge technologies, are really pushing to get a foothold. And I think that means a deal. That means a deal for people who are willing to go out and give it a try. Now, there's sort of the low-hanging fruit of folks like, you know, Mogulus and Ustream, who make it extremely easy to broadcast. They make it extremely easy to broadcast, live cast, to stream out to the world.
Yep.
If you want to take that one step farther and, you know, be willing to, you know, have a video player, have, you know, do a little bit more development, a little more technical investment, I think you can get a real deal from some of these smaller CDNs. I mean, Dan Rayburn over at streamingmedia.com, which is a phenomenal resource for what's going on in the streaming media community. His blog is just great. does kind of a quarterly review of content delivery network costs.
Yep.
And his latest survey is showing really some impressive prices. Now you have to do a larger commit for some of these. So you're saying, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, X thousands of dollars a month with you, to get the really low prices. But, you know, people are paying, you know, 25, 40, 50 cents a gigabyte for streaming. And that's with the big guys, the expensive guys. You can get a lot cheaper than that. I think that, you know, if you're willing to, I think a lot of people are going to probably want to dip their toes in with a service like Mobulus, or Ustream. Once you've got a revenue model, once you know you're making money about it, then that's when you got to get out there and start making some calls to people like Hiwens, people like Swarmcast.
Right.
And, you know, they want your business. A lot of people want your business, and they will absolutely work with you to see if they can make it economically viable for you to start broadcasting over the internet. So it's a great time to start.
And then lastly, what about the hardware side? You and I were talking a bit about some of the things that Cisco's doing and some of the moves that are made to put codecs directly into the routers. What's happening in that realm?
Absolutely, yes. There's this movement, and we've seen a couple companies taking a swing at it, and Cisco just announced that they're entering the business too. And that's basically looking at video format the way we look at sort of any other transport level technology, right? Like right now, it's really important. We're like, okay, what format video do you want? What plugins do you have? You know, oh my gosh, what kind of bandwidth do you support? Let's sit down. Let's do all of our transfers. We have to sit and predict our audience and figure out what kind of content we have and who they are and what they're going to want. And we're going to transcode it all into, you know, 65 different formats in advance because, oh my gosh, maybe they have cell phones and that's a crazy market.
Yeah.
Right? And we have to have horrible planning and the technical barrier to entry for delivery to all the screens is really high. Well, you know, folks out of the telephone companies and communication companies looking at it and saying, you know what, it's a format, it's a way of interacting with a hardware device. So there's a limited number, and this stuff is really, you know, with the speed of processors coming up, is really quite viable to do at a lower level, to do automatically. So the vision for the future is this on-demand transcode, where, you know, instead of, you know, me as a publisher right now, I can maintain you know, theoretically, a couple dozen formats for any given video inside my system right now, and it's a pain. But what I'd like to see for the future is I'd like to keep is called a mezzanine, or is a high-quality version of a file. You know, let me keep like a 5-megabit version of a file, nice high-quality full screen. And then when you come to my site, instead of me sort of just throwing what I have, I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to your device, and your device is going to tell me, hey, you know, I'm a big fan of H.264. So why don't you throw me an H.264 version? And it looks like I got about a megabit of availability right now. And what should happen is your browser or your device should be sending back a request to me. I should have a device sitting in front of my network that says, oh, okay, I'm going to negotiate with you. I'm going to see, hey, you got H.264? Great. Without, you know, the content on my side or, you know, you choosing the thing on your side, none of us should have to know. The hardware should be able to do that transcoding. And we're really seeing it happen. There's a company called Riptode out of Texas that they're all telephone company guys. They have put the Flash VP6 algorithm onto DSP chips. They have a great little device that is full of 8 parallel processors and a bunch of RAM. And it sits in front of a video library, and they've been concentrating on mobile delivery. I think that's where they got some traction with their customers.
Mm-hmm.
You call them up with a mobile phone. They take a look at what they have for video format. If they don't have the right one, they will pause you for, I think, half a second so they can get 15 frames of video encoding started, and then they feed you the transcoded video as they're transcoding it.
So now you don't have to worry about, you know, the proliferation of device types either, that you can deliver to, you know, essentially any resolution, any bit depth, I'm assuming, depending on the request from the device.
Exactly. And then that problem of tracking that becomes a vendor problem. You know, I know that I go with Riptode, so Riptode's going to worry about all the million different kinds of cell phones for me, what kind of format they take. They're going to worry about that. All my visitors have to do is come to my site. All I have to do is put one high-quality version of the video on my server.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, you know what? Let's segue for just a second, and you know, you may say, well, you know, I'm not the guy to talk to about advertising, but I'm just curious what you think about what's happening relative to insertion of ads and the way that different groups are delivering stuff, because it's, you know, when I think about, and I'll just say this because I know that your views are your own and not necessarily of IBS, but so I'll just throw out my opinion, and I'm sure Tim and Graham have one too, but you know there has to be a way for TV stations, now that, you know, Hulu.com and CBS and all the major broadcasters are delivering that, you know, if I'm a affiliate, I'm saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. What about us? You know, people aren't going to watch the show anymore if they can get it over the net. And, you know, there's everything having to do with monetizing that and how you go about doing that. What are you seeing with respect to trends that are emerging that seem to be gaining the most traction?
Okay. Well, there's certainly a lot of changes happening.
Yeah.
I think, you know, honestly, I think that there's an overarching trend happening in media in general. You know, distribution of media has traditionally been a very expensive affair. And that goes for the television networks. That goes for the movie studios. That goes for music studios. The people who have run the business of distributing media have been the people who controlled the distribution, you know. So the people who create media, you know, sometimes they integrate, but a lot of times they're independent people who go through the distributors who run the business. And that was their key. That's their control. Is that the distribution is hard to get into. It's expensive. It's difficult to manage. Well, that's going away. You know, distribution is getting cheap and it's getting easy to manage. And people are building free tools all the time to let you do that for yourself. And, you know, obviously it's a problem with the movie industries. Obviously it's a problem with recording studios.
Yeah.
The television scene, the exact same thing. You know, all these people, you know, folks like Joss Whedon. You know, Joss Whedon makes a bunch of great TV shows, you know, and he's done it through the networks. Well, you know, he's an independent creator, and he sat down and decided to make Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. Fun little TV show. He put it on the internet, and he got ungodly amounts of press. He got so many viewers. He got selling DVDs, all the rest of it, and he did it himself. That sort of thing is going to keep happening. And whereas the networks have said, hey, we have all these great shows for you, we're content creators, oh, and we also distribute this content out to everybody, it's not the same value proposition. So I think a lot of businesses are looking at themselves and saying, what do I do well? You know, core business.
Right.
And what local stations do well, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, is be local. You know, nobody has the local news gathering acumen, infrastructure, and, you know, and skill that a local TV station does. You know, when you want to know some deep analysis about what's happening in local politics, you're probably going to go to the morning paper, right? But if you want, if there's a house on fire, who are you going to go to? You're going to go to your local TV station.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to, you know, maybe a blogger might have something to say about it, but that's not the same thing as looking at a video image with a reporter sitting there talking to you. You know, I think there's a huge amount of value in that. I don't think that's going away. I think what we have to do is figure out new ways to get that to people, to make it, you know, to continue to make it relevant as the technology changes, and to continue to figure out how to make money. Television's been a very lucrative business for many, many years. Local television, you know, they've had FCC licenses. You know, it's a limited monopoly. That's worth a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Well, again, that sort of limited distribution is going away. So they're going to have to figure out, you know, maybe the business gets leaner. You know, maybe that's just how it is now. Maybe they have to figure out different ways to monetize. And, you know, there's been some neat movement in the newspaper community, a lot of local blogs. LostRemote.com is a great website talking about local television, local media, and sort of in the future.
What's it called? What's it called?
LostRemote.com.
LostRemote, okay.
You know, like in your couch.
Yeah. Like that's never happened to me, you know.
Unfamiliar concept, yeah.
Well, TJ, don't you think, though, that the technology is changing that bloggers can, you know, cover things even events on their cell phone and stream it live via Quick and other services?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is definitely a lot of value to the crowdsourcing information. But, you know, there's also a reason why people listen to journalists, why there's a difference between the letters page and what the and a reporter's story in a newspaper. You know, I think that we're going to see a mixing of citizen journalism, crowdsourced journalism, but I think there's still really a space for professional journalists, professional storytellers, people who can contextualize information, people who have domain expertise, you know, whether it's local politics, crime, you know, technology, whatever's happening in an area. I think there's very much a place for professional journalists alongside the scrum of bloggers.
Well, and also people that know how to put together a story, encapsulate it, and tell it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We've been for the first time really able to get local amateur, you know, crowdsourced voices out there, and so it's been pretty disruptive. And everybody's going, "Holy cow, this is awesome!" And it is awesome, but it doesn't reduce the value of the professional. You know, I mean, there's a reason people spend their careers learning how to do this well.
It is
valuable. It does mean.
I agree with you, but I also think we're in a time of great change in journalism, both print and broadcast. And you know, I think that we're seeing print journalism kind of wither at this point and transform. And a lot of these voices, a lot of these people that have been trained and spent their careers working for big newspapers and magazines will be doing their own thing on blogs. So I see blogging as being one of the areas where professional journalists can do what Josh Whedon has done for his television shows. They can kind of go out on their own and kind of, take out the middleman, if you will. But there will be thousands of voices as opposed to just, one or two in a city.
I think you're absolutely right. And then, come down and we think about what is a blog. And then, we think right now is, hey, I'm a personal web blog. But the truth is, it's getting more complicated, right? Some of these becoming businesses are making their livings off of this. So is that when they become a journalist? It's happening in the middle there. And I mean, on the other hand, it kind of relates back to what we were talking about when saying, well, where's all the money coming from for video? News, people haven't really paid for news. People get the news, but it's paid for by advertisers,
right.
And when you think about it, that's kind of an odd business model, right? You're making something, but what audiences, what televisions and the business of television, the business of newspaper has not been the creation of news, but it's been the creation of an audience.
Well,
what's
interesting about that is that I got into a very, very spirited discussion at a dinner party about 2 weeks ago about this exact topic. And it was also about micropayments, that one, I think it was a Business Week guy that proffered up the thing, about micropayments for articles and how to save newspapers. Well, so the discussion was around payment. And two of us were adamant that we are paying and we're paying with our attention. And the others were, no. I mean, it's got to be money and you got to pay money for this and so on and so forth, especially if you're skipping ads with your DVR. And the reason I was so adamant about the attention piece is that there are so many places for me to invest the little bit of time that I have to consume media that whoever gets my attention, that's the value rather than me, giving them a dollar to watch their show.
Sure. But the question is, what's that value worth?
Right.
Cause it used to be there wasn't a really good way to measure it before, and they got limited ways of getting that attention. So, people kind of got to name their own price.
Yep.
Well, there's competition in the marketplace now, so all of a sudden there's somebody next door who says, I can get that attention for a nickel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, attention's in a new marketplace now.
Yeah. Well, we have been taking strides to keep this to about 30 minutes-ish, and so I thought we would do that. And I want to thank you, TJ, for carving out time on a Saturday morning to chat with us about this. This is a real hot area, and you are... so deep into this. This has been great.
Well, thanks for having it. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, have a great weekend. Thanks, guys.
Yep, we'll see you.
Take care, everybody.
All right, take care.